Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome, everybody. In early 2020, in the heady couple of months before the world changed, Crown Investigation launched the TV show Making a Monster. Making a Monster brought together the world's leading forensic psychologists, psychiatrists, and pathologists to share their first-hand insights into the minds of some of the most notorious serial killers. Alongside the TV show, Crown Investigation released an extra podcast series titled Making a Monster, The Tapes, which gives extra access to the contributors featured, revealing unheard interview footage. My name's Sam Pearson, one of the producers on the podcast series, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined here today for a very special CrimeCon interview with two of those psychologists, criminal profiler Professor Paul Britton and geographic profiler Professor Sam Lundgren. Let's start off with a big question, Sam. Why does true crime storytelling matter?
It absolutely does matter because it cuts through the fiction and through to the fact. I think we all know, especially in the past, you know, fiction portrays many, many stereotypes about crime. And actually, it's really important that we cut through that and that we actually understand the reality. It also, I think, as well, it also gives empowerment to people as well, because sometimes, you know, no matter how effective a criminal justice system is, for example, victims' voices sometimes aren't heard. And justice sometimes isn't done. And actually, true crime storytelling can really contribute to both of those things.
Hmm. Paul, although it can sometimes be uncomfortable terrain, in your view, is there a reason why the true crime genre is so important?
There are a variety of reasons why it's important. One that I think is overlooked sometimes is that the people who listen, who involve themselves in true crime material, sometimes have facts, observations, insights that have been missed in other investigations. And if the true crime genre can help them, A, to become familiar with aspects of an investigation of a crime, and secondly, make them feel, yes, there is something that I might add, then we do find occasionally that they lead to information that can close an investigation that's been hanging around for years. And that alone is worth it.
Hmm. And what are the considerations from your perspective when us in the media landscape are making these true crime stories? What are the considerations that we should take into account, do you think?
I think the most important thing is tell the truth. It shouldn't be glamorised. It shouldn't be added to or embellished just because it makes it sound better. It needs to be the raw, simple, unvarnished truth. I think you also need to be particularly aware of both the victims and, where the victims are no longer living, the victims' families, so that these people, their sensibilities, the pain they suffer, and please remember that that pain never really goes away. People talk about closure, finishing a case so the families get closure. They never get closure. Their loved one is dead, or whatever it happens to be, and always will be. So you don't close it, but you may help to alleviate the pain a little.
Can I just add?
Absolutely.
Compassion and respect for the victims involved, but also I think importantly, evidence, taking an evidence-based approach. So understanding, you know, some of the, you know, the explanations for why people have done what they might have done, and helping understanding. So getting past. So true factual representation, but then going that step further and talking to experts and understanding the evidence and often the science underneath some of the investigations.
For sure. And Paul, you mentioned that the pain there, and as a forensic psychologist, are there any techniques that you've picked up professionally that help you to approach a case in consideration for the victim's family?
Well, I came to this work having worked as a clinician, where I had patients rather than, if you like, forensic clients. So my early learning was in the sensitivities, the understanding of the pain and the pathways, and the techniques for leading people back from that pain towards insight and through that back to something approaching normality. And for me, it's just the same application of that, but in a slightly different setting.
And Sam, does your area of expertise, obviously being a geographic profiler, does that keep you more removed, or is that quite naive? Are there any similarities in your approach?
It does keep me removed, but I'm also very mindful that every dot on a map represents, you know, it's often a really tragic series of events. And also with the ripples outwards, as Paul said, to people's families. And I also bear in mind as well, because often if I do a geographic profile, particularly on a cold case, you know, it's not unheard of that victims' families will get in touch with me, and, you know, because it gives, you know, hope. So we've got a real responsibility, actually, and we have to be very mindful of that, of balancing how we put across what we've done and not giving false hope, for example. So really important.
Absolutely. One thing that we'll do is we'll open up to a couple of questions in the audience at the end of this, so start thinking about your questions. But Paul, have you ever felt a case starting to get hold of you in any way? That pain starting to kind of fall on you rather than the victim and the victim's family?
I understand the question, but basically the answer is no. However, part of my work is understanding the victim, how they got to be a victim and why they got to be a victim. And it is the truth that after the years have gone by, those victims tend to sit in the corner of the consulting room, and they make you feel that you have to be careful. Even though you've got to develop a rapport with an offender or a prospective offender, don't forget me. Don't give all of your time into making him or her understand themselves, understand how they... Don't forget what they did. And that becomes, I think, quite important overall in what we do. And just one other thing.
Absolutely.
You're right. You talk to Sam about geographical profiling and you talk to me about these other matters. Unless Sam feels differently, we tend to merge so that while Sam focuses very much on the geographical, she inevitably deals with other factors. And for me, on my list of materials, at the top are ordnance survey maps, street plans. So although, in a sense, we've been brought up in slightly different silos of ways of investigating, we work easily together. So that shouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah, you can't separate the two. They inform each other, don't they?
I think so.
You know, you absolutely need to understand the geography and also the behavioural aspect as well of a crime.
Absolutely. And what, and Paul, you mentioned there that you ultimately you felt that you've never had, or maybe that's putting words in your mouth, but you don't feel like a case has ever taken hold of you. Have you ever given any advice to any other up-and-coming kind of psychologists? And this question's to you as well, Sam, really. But are there any kind of warning signs or ultimately dangers that you have to kind of make sure that you avoid in making sure that nothing does?
I, 2 points in my answer to that. The first is my advice is don't do it, because it's a horrible way to spend your time. It really is. If you think about what we do, where we start, where we go, it's not something that you would say, here's a beautiful way to spend your life. It's a necessary way. The second thing, and I think this is a clear answer to your question, one of the most concerning statements, comments I've ever heard was from a psychologist who works in this area, and he was saying that the most exciting thing that he has in his life, better than sex, is being involved in a serious high-level investigation. Now, for me, if a person finds that so exciting, they probably ought to think about doing something else.
Anything to add, Sam?
No, I just think, you know, you have a responsibility for yourself in terms of looking after yourself. I think I said it earlier as well. And also, you know, I have a team of people working with me now who, while they're not geographic profilers, they're working in really difficult areas, you know, online child sexual abuse, for example, the indecent images of children. And I have a responsibility to their well-being's at the heart of, you know, my responsibility as their team leader. And so I have to make sure that there are things in place to safeguard their mental health.
As mentioned at the beginning, Crown Investigations TV show Making a Monster profiles some of the most notorious serial killers using insight from people like yourselves, forensic criminologists, psychologists, psychiatrists, pathologists. Sam, I mean, you mentioned there you've got a team underneath you who are not necessarily geographic profilers, but is there another area of criminology that you find interesting that outside of your own that you have, you know, maybe considered taking a little bit more on yourself, or maybe it's a bit of a passing interest?
Yeah, well, there's very much so. So I probably spend 80% of my time in the recent past and for the next probably couple of years conducting research into online child sexual abuse, as I just mentioned. So there are between 550,000 and 850,000 individuals at this moment in the UK who pose a risk to children. So it's in epidemic proportions. And there's a huge effort in law enforcement to try and tackle this problem. And of course, interestingly, if you think about it from a geographical perspective, the world, you know, on the dark web and the clear web, there's no physical geography. You know, I have to start thinking about geography in an entirely different way, but they're still environments, and offenders operate within those environments. They still make decisions about where to target and who to target. And so it's about taking these skills as a geographic profiler in the real world, if you like, into the virtual world. And it's a fascinating area. It's also terrifying, frankly.
Sure.
Yeah, really terrifying, but it's such essential work.
I mean, from my amateur perspective, obviously, when I think of geographic profiling, I'm obviously thinking of, you know, a map and grid coordinates and that kind of thing. But you're mentioning there about kind of obviously going into the internet, and you can already you can imagine so many different other ways that geographic profiling obviously can be applied. Is there a new frontier of geographic profiling that you find yourself in, and is it getting much more expansive?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're on the cusp of, you know, it's very new, but this is where we're heading, really. You know, at the moment, it takes three clicks on the internet to access, child sexual abuse material. Mm-hmm. So we have to think of the internet as you know, and also there's no geographical boundaries. You know,
sure.
This is a global issue, and so we have to adapt our techniques in order to assist law enforcement to help track down these people.
And how about yourself, Paul? Are there any other areas of criminology that you've considered maybe as a passing interest?
I don't think one has passing interest in this. You either do it or you don't. And I think when Sam talks about, and you do, geographical, I think you're now talking about dimensional. It moves beyond those flat coordinates. For me, I think one of the important things that I would like to see happen is developing a library of the characteristics of the child sex abusers, of the serial killers, of all of these different things, but based upon real cases, so that when investigators are confronted with an issue, they have had the opportunity to see the offenders, to read the offenders, not in a textbook, not looking at abstracted notions, but real cases. And these are then broken down by specialists into specific examples of the different abstract quantities, conditions that they're talking about. Now, we made a start with this some years ago, and it was very effective. Problem was, it became controversial. A lot of folks wanted to own it. A lot of other folks felt, we don't want to go there. This is, you're taking our bailiwick, and you can't do that. I think that the more investigators have those skills taken away from people like me and others so that they can do it themselves. Yes, they have other folks to come back to for checking, but basically they can move things forward in a way that leads to much, much more crime resolution before anyone like Sam or myself is at all needed.
And obviously Making a Monster kind of features 10 incredibly disturbing cases. And are there any, not just amongst those 10, but cases outside of those as well, that you keep coming back to, that, you know, that pique your interest yourselves, that you kind of feel like you end up kind of reading about or perhaps listening to or watching TV series about, in the same way that obviously a lot of the people here at this event perhaps have kind of similar interests in those lines?
Well, for me, it's not cases that have been done and that are dealt with and closed that I've worked on or haven't. There are still a handful of cases that I've worked on, fairly sure of the answers, but they remain unresolved. And from time to time, you can't help but go back to those and to ask the question, what more could we know that might move it forward? And there are a couple of cases like that. And we are having some success in finding that little bit more information that moves it forward. I don't really want to say any more about those cases in case somebody brings it to fruition. But they're the ones that might bear more thought.
Of course.
There are a few. I mean, you know, I've studied probably thousands of, individual series of serial killers. It was my PhD topic, so I've immersed myself in this world. There are a few that stick with you, though, and I think I agree with Paul. The ones that are unresolved, actually, the case of Susie Lamplew springs to mind, and the suspicion of John Cannon being responsible for that. I think did you work on that case, Paul? No, you didn't. I come back to that quite often. And it's that unresolved. The ones that are unresolved are really sort of stick with you. Yeah.
And if I'm in that, there are ones that are unresolved, and yet you can point to areas that might give more information. And I'll think of a couple of cases where that's happened. And folks have gone out then following those additional pieces of information. Someone unexpectedly, as a consequence, is identified, but they can't bring the final information together that would allow them to arrest and seriously interview. They remain. They remain for two reasons. One is it's not closed, but secondly, the perpetrator's still out there and still active.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, does this bring us round full circle to that the initial thing, really, about why true crime exists? I mean, obviously, it kind of bisects, ultimately, why you guys do the profession that you do. It's ultimately to find the answer to this. But the reason why you're interested in this is because you're wanting to find out the honest truth to some of these crimes.
It's because someone asks us to. Mm-hmm. It's because an SIO somewhere or a family member somewhere says, this is stuck. Could you look? Could you help? And it's so difficult, even if you don't want anything more to do with anything like this. When someone is there, they've lost someone or something is unclear in this, and they're saying, how can you say no? You can't really just say, oh, no. You have to.
It's bringing it, you know, we do bring different perspectives as well, you know, to even with some crimes that have been investigated for decades, you know, sometimes you're just a fresh pair of eyes from a different perspective, looking at things from a different standpoint can sometimes, you know, just be
potentially with new techniques, modern techniques.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mentioned that obviously new media, true crime podcasts, alongside TV shows and books, I guess the kind of the older age media, have become a mainstay in telling these kinds of stories. It's obviously such a prominent media area at this event. Has the true crime media landscape positively affected your line of work? And if so, how?
So I'd go so far as to say that without it, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. Because, right. You know, well, I'm going to give away how old I am now, but back in my day, I grew up on an appetite of, used to go to the library and get these dusty FBI books off the shelf and had some strange looks from the librarian. And asked for Christmas, I used to get a monthly magazine and a free binder at the beginning and collect 12 months worth of issues. And that was my introduction to this world. And it just so happened that what I did then was it wasn't quite enough, and I was actually interested in I never got the answers as to why, and so I sought out the academic field. Mm-hmm. and then here I am.
I don't really know the answer to it.
Sure.
If I follow my own pathway, it came out of my clinical world. There was a patient. She had got herself into an awkward relationship with a policeman. And she ended up having to theoretically go to court. It seemed to me not to be the best thing to do. I spent some time talking with their divisional superintendent. During that, the question was, well, what is a psychologist? What do they do? Explained all of that. The lady didn't go to court, and I thought that was the end of it. A little while later, had a phone call from the head of CID at this particular place, who said, you don't know me, but I've been having a chat with this other... If I show you a murder scene that we've been stuck with for 2 years or more, do you think you can tell me anything about the offender? I said, I've no idea. Have a look. Come tomorrow. Please have a good breakfast before you come. And of course, then I had no idea what that meant. Now I know everything that that means. The short answer was, we're able to look at it, and in 2 days, exactly as Sam has just said, different way of looking at things, produce the psychological analysis. And the perpetrator was able to be arrested, I think, within 5 days of that, mm-hmm. after several years. So that's how I get in, and that's how the true crime value comes out of it to me.
Sure. And so, I mean, that's quite two fairly different ways, entries into the field, I guess, from both of you. Mm-hmm. And then thinking about from a modern perspective, obviously with the landscape as it is now, and both of you obviously contributing to that landscape as well with the TV shows that you do and the interviews and the books that you write and everything else. How does that kind of keep feeding your professional work? Does it feed your professional work? And if so, is there a positive element to it?
That's a good question. And I'm not really sure. I mean, I think they're quite separate for me, mm-hmm. actually, to be honest. And I think, you know, I think the true crime genre is a really important one. And actually, I think it can actually help solve crimes and hopefully ultimately prevent them as well. And there's some absolute cracking podcasts around that I do listen to, you know, with real investigative journalists, you know, really hard hitting, and have actually gone a long way to uncover evidence, as Paul said at the beginning, that sometimes investigations can't, and actually they just run out of steam and just, you know, there's nowhere else for them to go, and it just takes, again, it's a new set of eyes, it's the general public's eyes, right?
Of course, yeah.
So there's a synergy there, but I'm not sure it necessarily feeds into my work.
Sure. But I guess, as you mentioned, it must be a positive outlet, obviously, because of the number of eyes that it gets on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It garners reach and awareness of some of these cases.
I think part of the contribution that we bring is to try to make sure that two things don't happen. One is that we, in effect, prepare a how-to-get-away-with-it kit so that would-be offenders think, oh, yes, I need not to do that, I need to be aware of that. We work hard to make sure that doesn't happen. And the other thing is more difficult. It's that the offender does not get glamorised and lionised. Mm-hmm. In my casework, certainly been in a situation where offenders are delighted to be regarded as serial killers. Am I a serial killer yet? Mm-hmm. Can I lay out this particular victim in a way that's so theatrical, everyone will know it must be me? We have to work hard not to glamorise them. Remember, they are amongst the most banal of human beings. Mm-hmm.
I just makes me think. I worked on a case in New Zealand of a murder of a young woman who was out jogging in a local park and on a Saturday morning, and she got attacked and dragged into some bushes. And when I went to view the crime scene, the offender had posed her body. She was partially clothed, and it looked absolutely like it was a sexually motivated offence. And he'd covered her with leaves, and it was this very strange crime scene, one I've never seen before or since. But when he was finally arrested, not that long afterwards, he lived about 300 yards away from the crime scene, and he was asked about the posing of the body. He said, I did that because I saw it in CSI, and I did that to make mm-hmm. it look like a sexually motivated attack. Do you know, and that's where the blurs come sometimes with not true crime, but, you know, the
absolutely,
whole genre
yeah.
in terms of fictitious accounts and so on. And and going back to this, offenders wanting to, you know, almost sensationalise it themselves in
sure.
a way.
Sure, two yeah. really important points mm. there.
We call it staging.
Yeah.
And one of the That's things right. that is important is to distinguish in a crime scene what's real to the crime scene and what's staged.
Right.
Because sometimes people look to stage things to misdirect investigators.
Yeah.
And this is where the forensic element becomes so important, understanding what a real crime scene such as this ought to look like. And that's part of what we do.
And I think we have a little bit of time at the end now to field any questions from the audience. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
You mentioned earlier on about unresolved cases. Have you ever had an unresolved case that has gotten to you? And if so, how do you deal with that?
There's been a couple I've been involved in. I can't probably not give the details, but there's been a couple of, one in particular, an awfully brutal murder of an elderly lady in a remote town in New Zealand, which was, we think it was a burglary that went wrong, let's say. I don't not really like that expression. But despite, all efforts, including my own, that remains unresolved. And that always leaves, it's difficult because obviously you want to try and help and give something to the family of the victim to, you know, give them some sort of, and again, I don't want to use the word closure because it never closes, but at least maybe some comfort in seeing justice done.
I think there are two elements for me. One is, of course, it remains those unresolved cases, but in particular, it's the elements that one may have been involved with and advice given, questions asked, that could be answered, but don't seem to have been answered. So you can't help but feel, why didn't you go and get that? Why won't you get that? It would move it forward. That always rankles. And then the other, it's where I can think of a case where a whole family was butchered in pretty dreadful ways. And the likely offenders were quickly taken away by supporters and put into a situation where they couldn't be interviewed. And that left the police investigators very frustrated. And to this day, it leaves me frustrated as well. So there you are.
Fantastic. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. But my thanks to Professor Paul Britton and Professor Sam Lundgren for joining us at CrimeCon today. For more podcasts and videos of the interviews and sessions from CrimeCon, search for and subscribe to Crime Investigation on YouTube. And if you haven't already, please do hunt down the Making a Monster TV series. You can stream it today on Crime Investigation Play and have a listen to the podcast series of the same name for even more insight from Paul, Sam, and the other fantastic contributors featured. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.